I hope you all can hear me all right. Okay, well, good. You can't begin to talk about the history of Draper's Valley Presbyterian Church unless you go back 2,000 years. I am the church universal. I began with the death and resurrection of our Lord Jesus Christ 2,000 years ago. I have flourished through suffering and affliction, tribulation and calamity, distress, persecution and hunger, destitution and peril, and sword because of the love of Christ. My growing pains have brought about the fruit of the Spirit, love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, self-control, and faithfulness. His Spirit has moved us to a commitment and to the endurance, causing our body to continue and to spread all over the world. And so, Draper's Valley Presbyterian Church had its first beginning 2,000 years ago. However, in the United States of America, in the early years of our settlement, in a place known as Draper and Draper's Valley, there was a longing among the people to have a place to worship of their own. However, the people were not that many, and the denominations were many different ones. And so it seemed impossible and impractical for them to have a denominational church for each one. So the people decided to band together, and that they did. And about 3 miles from the little town of Draper, they bought some land. And that land is on what we know as the Old Baltimore Road. And it's the same Old Baltimore Road that goes out in front of this church right now. And sometimes you know it as the Wilderness Road. Sometimes it was known as Old Rock Road. And that is the road that the settlers moved west from the East Coast west, is the Old Baltimore Road, the Wilderness Road. And so they bought land on that piece of land, and it was there that they built the first building that was used as our Presbyterian church. Now, that building was known as Old Harmony. And though it was not built for a church, it was really built as a civic center, so to speak. And it was used for church services. It was used for teaching. I think it was primarily an institution for teaching. And so all the denominations met at Old Harmony in 1808. And the building was an old building with clapboard outside. On the inside, on one wall, was a huge fireplace, and they had seats or benches made out of logs that didn't have a back to them. And so that was the Old Harmony. And when the children were coming to school there, there were horses around all the time where they could ride to the school. And the minister would come to preach, and if he couldn't get there on Sunday when he was supposed to, whatever day he got there, they had preaching service. And it didn't have to be a Presbyterian or a Methodist or a Baptist or whatever to start with. But it started being that there were 4 different denominations that met at Old Harmony. The Presbyterian Church, was headed by Reverend George Painter. The Methodist Church at one time was headed by Mr. J.W. Smith. And the Christian Church was headed by Dr. Chester Bullard. And the Baptist Church was headed by Mr. Washington Connor. And so it was then, in 1930, that they began to sort of divide out into different denominations. And it was there that they met and studied and taught and learned about the Bible and about the community. Now, those people there, and this is interesting, they joined together to have church services. And to this very day, Come Thanksgiving of this year, 2005, the Christian Church, the Methodist Church, and the Presbyterian Church will have what's known as a community Thanksgiving service. And so the churches have worked together through all these many years, and it's still happening. We do the World Day of Prayer together. So these churches that started at Old Harmony back in 1808 are still working together for the kingdom of God. That's what they're working together for. And so it's a wonderful thing if you stop to think about it. Now then, in 1832, the Presbyterians under the Reverend George Painter were the first ones to break loose into their own denomination. And the Reverend George Painter graduated from seminary in 1924. He and his family moved to Draper, to Withville in 1925. Now, somehow, the session books, the first two session books of the Presbyterian Church have been lost. And so, from 1832 to 1851, we don't have those records. And many of the things that we know were handed down by word of mouth. And for those of you who looked back in the room at the end of the entrance back there, we have some old books, and they'll have lists of names, but there won't be a date out from them. And that was because those people, somebody remembered that those people were in a circle, those people went to the church, or they belonged to the church to begin with, or whatever. But the date's not there. However, the records at Montreat have very clear support of the fact that Reverend George Painter did begin the Presbyterian Church. And he, in 1826, I believe it was, I can't remember the exact date, that he was accepted. And then in 1832, we paid taxes. And the taxes went, I don't know whether you all are familiar with it or not, but we have what was known, used to be known as a head tax. And for every member of the church, you pay a certain amount of money to the presbytery. And so they paid $8 in 1832, and $5 of that was not only for the Drapers Valley Presbyterian Church, but also for the Anchor of Hope Presbyterian Church. And $3 was left over to go on the current expense. Now, when Mr. Painter became our pastor, he was not just the pastor of the Drapers Valley Presbyterian Church. He was pastor of Drapers Valley, Anchor of Hope, and the New Dublin Presbyterian Church. Now, the New Dublin Presbyterian Church is considered the oldest church in this area, but we had the same pastor. And in 1832, down there, the Presbyterians had decided that they wanted a church of their own. And so they bought 3 acres of land from a Mr. Shepherd. And that 3 acres of land is right here. Now, the Old Harmony Church, I don't know whether you all are familiar with it or not, but at the end of this Baltimore Road, there's a fork that goes like toward Dalton. Well, the Old Harmony Church sat on that right-hand side of that road, right across from what's known now as the Galbraith home, and that was the Red Horse Tavern. And so that was the place where that church was at that time. And so up here, then they came west and bought the land right here to build this church. And so this church was built in 1840, this building was, and the brick were made by hand. And not only did the people work on this church to build it, but Mr. Painter did also. He worked right with his congregation to build this church. And then he built his home. Virginia ought to be doing this. She knows more about that than I do. But anyway, he built his home at where we turn on Kirby Road. And so this church was built. Now then, The sanctuary is the same size that it always was, but some changes had to be made. When it was first built, the windows were square. They were square and clear glass. There was no steeple, and there was no, here there were two windows back here. And those two windows, if you look on the back side of the church, you can see where those two windows were taken out, and they were bricked up with something else. And when we started working on this church the last time, they had to shore up that end of the church. The wheel window at the in the balcony was there. Now then, this sanctuary, we had it. You had the little room back there where you men stand now to do the tapes. It was known as the session room, and it was used as a Sunday school room. And then, believe it or not, there was a little room where the stairway is, and that was used as a Sunday school room. And then they usually had two Sunday school classes up in the balcony. But then the balcony was built for the black people to have a place to worship. And there were two pot-bellied stoves, one on this side and one on this side. And when I came here, I've been here 60 years. I'm a new kid on the block. When I came here 60 years ago, Dr. Sartell taught on this side of the church, and Miss Blanche Honaker taught the women on this side of the church. And Dr. Sartell talked so loudly, it was hard to hear Miss Blanche over here. And the big old stove was right there, and there are black spots there right now. And it used to be, for some reason, and nobody knows for sure when, the organ was up in the balcony. The choir at one time sang in the balcony, and then they were moved down here. There have been four organs in this church, and this one is the newest one that Martha plays. And, of course, this is the newest piano that we have. And so this building was built in 1840. Now then, you'll find some discrepancies, and this is always going to be true. The church was built in 1840, and Presbytery met here in 1842 or some such time. But the deed back there says 1847. And on all these churches, we've been working on them in Pulaski County for the exhibit at the courthouse. They don't G-Haul. You cannot go by the date on the deed. You have to go by the church records, because the dirt date on the deed rarely coincides with the actual happening. And so if you see the difference that in 1847, the deed to this church, that's not when this church was built. It was built in 1840. Now then, when it was built, there were big old oak trees that went out that way. And these boxwood that the children and grandchildren play in all the time, they were there, and that was the entrance to the church. The entrance you walked up, that was the walkway. And when they built this church, he also built a school building, a brick building that had two rooms in it. Now then, we don't have a record, but it's assumed that Mr. Painter taught in that school at that time. Mr. Painter served for 37 years in the church of Draper's Valley, New Dublin, and so on. And we shared a pastor with New Dublin for several years. Anyway, many changes have been made in this church since 1840. The first change was probably made in 1895, the first time that they made a change in the church. Now then, in 1936, these lights, these had always been oil lamps, and so they were electrified by the Delco Company. And the first light bill that AT&T gave us for these lights was $2 a month, was how much they charged for having these lights. Then in 1948, I've forgotten the date that they put the windows in, put the arch on them, and glass, frosted glass. And I think that's the only changes they made at that time, at that particular time. And then in 1948, we were outgrowing this building, and this was in my lifetime, and they added 6 Sunday school rooms and the basement. And the basement was one large room to start with in 1948, and so that gave us 6 more Sunday school rooms for us to have. And at that time, the partition between the stairway and that little room back there was torn down, and that was left open at that particular time. They also put a furnace in 1948, and this was under the Dr. Sartell. And then in 1954, we still needed more room, so they built 6 more rooms to the church for Sunday school rooms. And those 6 rooms, the basement was then divided, and half of it was used, a part of it was used for the kitchen. And those of you who weren't in this church before they made changes just a few years ago, down in the kitchen part, there's a small room, if you go down the steps on the left. Well, that was part of the kitchen back then. And you have no, there was a big counter that separated the actual cooking and the other part of that. And then the biggest part where the Sunday school room is down there now, where the young people's class taught, was the dining area. And when I came here to teach, before George and I were married, while we were still in the dating game, Mrs. Park Sheeler started teaching a young couple's class. And we met in the kitchen of the basement. That's where we were to start with. And then in 1954, when they built 6 more Sunday school rooms and divided that kitchen, we got a room upstairs. And now, don't you know they took it away from us and put it into a nursery? So we have so many children and babies, you know, we put it into a nursery. But anyway, that's where the old Baraka class was. And I have to talk a little bit about that, because that's the first class, as far as I know, where they taught men and women together. Always before, the men were on one side of the church, the women on the other side of the church, and they had 2 different teachers. And when Ms. Sheeler started teaching us, we started out as a small enough group that we were in the basement. And then when they built these new rooms, they gave us that room up at the top of the steps up there, the first one. And we would call the Baraka class. And that room was full of young couples. And you know that those young couples that she taught are the very couples that worked in this church. And you know who's left of those young couples? There are 2 people left who were in that Baraka class, and that's Mary Gannaway and Ann Armbrister. The rest of them have gone on to be with the Lord, but they've left their mark here with this congregation, with their children. And she taught us, and it was a wonderful class. She was so smart, and you'd ask her, she'd say, "What you want me to teach next time?" And you could say Daniel or Jeremiah or Isaiah or whatever you said. And that's what we learned the next time. Of course, her father was one of Dr. George Gilmer. And so that makes some difference. So in 1954, we had another change to the church. And then, Martha, I forgot, you told me the date, but I've forgotten. In the 70s, Martha Preston decided it would be nice to make that wheel up there to use stained glass. And so she and several women of the church did that stained glass and put in that wheel up there. They'd been there all these years. And so the beautiful wheel that you look forward to when you go out of this church was done by the women in this church. and under Martha's direction. And that was in 1970. 76? She knew you exactly.
And, huh? It was installed on Saturday before Easter.
Oh, Saturday before Easter. Okay. And then in 1989, due to the bequest or the will or the leading of a large sum of money to this church by one of its longtime members, we were able to build what is probably the most functional, most elegant parts of our building program, the new fellowship hall that you all enjoy today, the choir room and the session room and two bathrooms. They were built then. And in 1990, they were dedicated at homecoming. And so the church, this church has developed in those many ways in a physical sort of being. Now we need to talk about the things that the church has been responsible for. The schools, for instance. And we've already mentioned that Mr. Painter taught at the first school. And when he died in 1863, we didn't have a minister who lived here because we didn't have a manse. See, the house that he built and was used as a manse was his home. So when Mr. Isaac Neff came, we didn't have a manse for him. So he lived in Dublin instead of in Draper. And then it was during the period of Reconstruction. And so there was not a teacher for the school that was here. And you know, to begin with, the ministers were usually the teachers because they were the best educated people around. The average person didn't have that type of education. And that's one reason why the ministers did it. And so people were, during those years that Mr. Neff was in Dublin after Mr. Painter died, they had to have private schools or something. And sometimes they would hire people to come and live in their homes and teach their children. And so eventually the people became very concerned about their children's education. And so they banded together again and they bought land from Mr. Sam Honaker. And it's right close to the bottom of Draper's Mountain. If you all know where Jane Kelly lives, they built a school there called the Draper Valley Academy. And it was right across the street, or right close to where the Jane Kelly lives now, the Kelly Filling Station. And this was before, now 81, it was a different kind of setup there by then. So it was there on that property that they built the Draper's Valley Academy. And this academy had two large rooms and one small room. And it was a wooden building, so to speak. And then at that academy, they were taught by the minister. And to get so that the minister could live there, when Dr. Gilmer came to be the pastor, they built the manse. And the manse was a white building, frame building, and they were still using it when I came here, that was across the road from Kelly's service station. And that manse was built there. And so Mr. Gilmer and his wife were the teachers in that school. And I do not know exactly what happened, but in 1905, Mr. Tate rented that school, and he and his wife taught it. And it wasn't just a church school. It was a school for anybody who wanted to come to it. And then in 1911, the Pulaski County School Board rented that building, and that became a public school at that time. And that building was eventually torn down, and we won't go into all the schools that developed in this area at that time. So anyway, that was the school was there, and Mr. Gilmer taught it, and his wife taught. And then Mr. Tate, and I don't know who else taught in that school. And then in 1911, it became a public school. All right, now another thing that's always been important to the Drapers Valley Presbyterian Church is Sunday school. Mr. Painter organized the first Sunday school in 1851, and it was found in his notes where he had written that he considered the Sunday school the strongest work of the church. And it's still the strongest work of the church. And when they established this first Sunday school, they made rules and regulations that had articles on it about what would be happening and how they were to conduct this. And they were to have a superintendent, and they were having a certain number of teachers, and the teachers were to be trained. And it was interesting, they didn't have a library, but they had books that people could check out. Now, they didn't really have a library, but people could check out books for that particular time. In 1933, we found records that we didn't know we had, so we started working on this. But you're not going to believe this, but in 1933, there were 147 people in Sunday school, and they had 14 officers and teachers. And throughout the years, the Sunday school was the thing that required the building. These rooms that have been built were built for the expansion of Sunday school. And so Sunday school to this day is an important part of this church. And it's interesting that through the years, the membership has fluctuated so. In 1851, they could just come 6 months out of the year, which really bothered them because they couldn't travel the roads at that time. And then it was hard to heat the building for them to come. And I can remember when, and a few of you can remember, when Mr. Ralph Allison was the superintendent of the schools, he'd stand right there and he'd say, I want 100. And one Sunday he'd say, we didn't have but 76 today. And bless his heart, he never did get 100. And I notice we're sort of falling off here lately. You all got to get your kids here to Sunday school now. And then another thing that was of great interest to this church was the youth work. And you know, they just had a terrible time getting the youth work going. A man by the Mr. Holliday, who was one of our pastors, tried to organize a youth group around 1915 or some such time. And because of the distance, they couldn't get it going very well. And the first youth group were called missionaries. And they were sort of an outgrowth of the women's work, which we'll talk about in a few minutes. And they were called a missionary group. And then in 1922, they were changed to Christian Endeavor. Now, I went to Christian Endeavor, not in 1922, though. But when I went to Young People's, it was Christian Endeavor. And then it had different names. The King's Workers was one name for them or something like that. And it wasn't in this church until 1936 that the young people began to catch on. And that was due to the work of Mrs. Nat Kelly, who was known by most people as Miss Virginia or Aunt Jenny. And she started working with the young people in 1936. And she and her husband, Mr. Nat Kelly, who was known as most people by Uncle Nat, worked with the young people till 1953. And from the time that they started working with the young people, they just moved forward. They just moved forward. It was something about the way that she did it. Now, there were other people who helped them, but they were the most consistent ones. And then after Dr. Sartell became here as a pastor, they decided to buy a car that they'd used, which had a church car. And so Uncle Nat and Mr. Ted Painter used to take those two cars out into the byways and bring young people to this church every Sunday night. And there are people right here in Draper who do not belong to Draper's Valley Presbyterian Church who got their start right here. And Mr. Nat and Mr. Ted Painter were very, very, very punctual, very religious about bringing those kids into the church every Sunday night. And so the church, the young people just grew and grew and grew. And in 1950, Mr. Sartell was given recognition for the outstanding work that this church had done with young people. And it came from the General Assembly in 1950. And one of the notes said, from that day to this, the young people have kept moving on. And in addition to Miss Virginia Kelly, Miss Virginia didn't have any children, and Irene Oglesby did not have any children of their own. Irene used to say, I don't have any birth children, but I got a lot of children out there. And there have been other people who have contributed, but those two women, I suppose, can be given recognition for the work that they did with the young people, although not just one year, but year in and year out. And we've had other people. Nat and Debbie have done a lot with the young people. David and Pat World did a lot with the young people. And then we had people who worked with the younger groups. Virginia Allison worked with the younger group for a long time. Ann Armbrister worked with the younger group for several years. And so there have been people, other people, but Mr. Nat, Ted, Miss Virginia, and Irene are four people who really made a tremendous contribution to the youth work in this church and in the whole presbytery. This church has always been mission-minded also. As a matter of fact, in 1873, Mr. Whit Painter, who must have been a character from what I hear about him, he was the only son of Mr. George Painter, who did not marry, and he became a missionary to China. And they tell all kinds of stories about him. And one that they loved to tell was when he came back from China as an older man. Well, he had a rocking chair up here in front of these pot-bellied stoves, and he was always called upon to pray. You had to call on Mr. Whit to pray. And they said when he'd get up to pray, he didn't pray short prayers, prayed long prayers, and he did sort of a revolving motion. I don't know exactly what he did. But then one Sunday, he got mixed up on his revolution, and he did it twice. And so he just prayed more and more as time went on. So in 1873, that's how far back our missions began. And then in 1891, Mr. Joseph Kelly did home missions by starting a Sunday school in Corners Valley. And then in 1911, Mr. George H. Gilmer did home mission work in Abington Presbytery. And incidentally, when I first came here, he was still living, and he had retired from the mission work, and he would preach a lot. Dr. Sartell was gone at that when I first came here, and he preached fairly often and he taught a Sunday school class part of the time. So after he retired from the mission work, he continued mission in this church, so to speak. And then in 1930, they had their first vacation Bible school. And they used to have to get people to come in and direct it. But we don't do that. Miss Virginia, do you remember Miss Hess and what was the other lady's name? There were two ladies that would come and conduct Bible school. And do what? Yeah, that's right. Anyway, and the Bible school, they came from everywhere to Bible school. And sometimes they would have as many as 600 students in Bible school, according to the records. And after a while, after they hired those two ladies to come in and conduct the Bible school, ever since I've been around, people in church have done it. And they've had very, very successful Bible schools throughout all those years. And then Mr. Freeman, when he was here, he had an outreach of home missions. But in 1948 to 1955, Mr. Sartell preached at what was called Reed Creek. And I can remember his going down there and preaching to those people in 1948. And then in 1979, Sarah Allison, who is the daughter of Ralph Allison, and she's Sarah Goad now, she and her husband went into foreign missions, and they went to Africa. They were over there for several years. And then today, if you look on the back of our bulletin, and I couldn't believe it, on the back of our bulletin, and here they're divided up according to MTW and MNA and PCA and others and what have you. But I counted them, and we support 23 missionaries. Virginia?
One of those is a direct descendant of George Payne.
I'm sorry.
One of those is a direct descendant of George Payne. That's George Mixon.
What'd she say now?
One of our missionaries is a direct descendant of George Payne. Yeah, that's George.
Yeah, Mixon. Yeah, that's right. I knew that. I've forgotten which one he is. I know which one he is, but
George
I can't.
Mixon.
Yeah, Mixon is a direct descendant. Virginia, I'm sorry I couldn't hear you. You know I don't hear so well. Anyway, I think that's tremendous. You think about a church of this size that we're supporting 23 missionary. So missionary work has been a tremendous thing in this church. Evangelism has been a tremendous thing in this church forever. And then we want to talk a little bit about the women's work. Women had a hard time. They decided early we had what we called missionary work. Now, this was before it was organized. And Mrs. Eliza Gilmer was the one who was responsible for the first women's work that we had in this valley in 1874. Now, it was not organized into circles or that kind of thing at all. It was just organized into women's work, and it was called mission work. And, you know, they were always so mission-minded. And for me, it's been a wonderful thing to find out. I was reared in Glade Spring, and I was surprised to learn that in 1898, Mrs. Gilmer and Mrs. Laura Horn, who was Dr. Horn's wife in Glade Spring, where I was brought up, those two women went before Presbytery and asked them for permission to organize the women's work, to unite the women's work. And Dr. Gilmer was on the presbytery. So in 1898, they passed that they could do this. And it was known as the Missionary Society. And don't you know that in 1899, they reneged on it. They didn't have the records or something, and so they said the women couldn't do it. Well, see, they had already started getting organized. And I remember Ms. Horn. Anyway, the women kept on working and working. And finally, in 1904, they agreed that the women could have a united women's work. And so the women in the presbytery were united. And presbytery, women's presbytery, met in this church, met at Pulaski, met at Dublin. And the records, we have records back there going back to 1922. And so they decided that they could do that. Then in 1922, the General Assembly decided that it might be good if the women, instead of being called missionary society, were called auxiliary. And then that the women would be divided into circles. Now, see, we didn't have any circles up to this time. The women just met as a group. And so in 1922, they decided to become auxiliaries. And I can remember Mama going to the auxiliary society. Anyway, and they divided us into circles. And so that's how that began. And the women thought, well, the men have just suggested this. And so I think maybe that might be a good idea. You know, the women were, still are, have always been, and I assume always will be, under the General Assembly in the session. You needn't think you're going to get out there and do anything that you hadn't gotten passed by the session. Buddy, you're in trouble. But I tell you this much, too. If you talk to that session just right, they'll do most anything you want them to. So we have been under. Now then, when we were in the PCUS, we were known as Women in the Church. No, Women of the Church. I have to think about it because we're WIC now. That's how I think of it. And then when we went to PCA, we became known as Women in the Church. That's why you have WIC, W-I-C, Women in the Church. And see, when we went to PCA, they didn't want to bring all this stuff from PCUS, so we couldn't be Women of the Church. So now we're Women in the Church, okay? And as far as I know, that's the only names we've ever had, is Missionary Society, Auxiliary, Women of the Church, and Women in the Church. And you know, I can remember at home, Mama always had a little book about this big, and they studied a mission book all the time. They had their circle lesson, and they used the Christian Endeavor, and what was the survey? The survey had the circle lessons in them, and they had Bible study, but they always were studying a foreign mission book on China or somewhere, always. And so that was just from missionary society. And that's why the young people were called a missionary society to begin with. So those are some of the things about the women's work. Now, the men's work. They had a terrible time with you men. And you know they still are having. Through the years, they've been time and time again trying to get the men's work organized. And for a little while, and what's wrong with you all? For a little while, it goes really well, you know, and you all elect you some officers. And I remember Tom Humphrey was treasurer for 100 years. And then it just backs down, and you don't have it anymore. And now then, Ken's trying to get a little men's work going. And I don't know how well you all doing with it, but I tell you one thing. You ought to take some lessons from some old women. Anyway, the men's work's very important. And you need to be studying the Bible. And you need to be studying a missionary book or something, just same as the women do. So the men's work's had a hard time, but they're still working on it. And then I guess you need to talk about the cemetery a little bit. The first cemetery that we ever had, the land was brought from Mr. Jonathan Sayers. And I've never been to it, but it's a few miles up the road somewhere. And they say that there's an Indian burial ground there too. And they say that some Revolutionary soldiers are buried there. But in 1908, they gave it the name of Oglesby Cemetery. Now, Frank, I'm not getting into y'all's business. So, anyway, it was named Oglesby Cemetery. Now, how long it had been there, I don't know. Now then, in 1918, they decided that we needed a cemetery a little closer to the church. So they bought land across the road, and where our cemetery is right now, that was the land that they bought in 1918. And the first people who were buried in that church, in that cemetery, were people who died of flu, of the flu epidemic. So we've learned a little bit about the cemetery. Now then, I don't know exactly, this is close to my heart. All of the church business, and I think I've tried to cover every facet of the church activity. And it, if you go back and study it and look at it, it has been a very, very wonderful and a very, very great heritage. But you know, you can't sit back on your laurels and talk about your heritage. That's good, but you have to move forward. You have to move forward. And so in 1982, we decided to celebrate our sesquicentennial year, 150 years of this church. It was a tremendous year. It really was. We did something every month. And some of these young people, like Debbie Kelly and Pat Worrell and Susan Pratt, wrote a skit. And in that skit, they immortalized much of what had happened in this church. We had sons of the church to come back and preach. We had former pastors to come back and preach. And you know, George and I were chairman of that thing. And I can truthfully say, I have never seen such cooperation from any group of people. Every one of them, everybody, wanted to make a contribution. And I used to, when everybody would say, what can I do? What can I do? What do you want me to do? And when you look at the records of that year, everybody did something. It was a great contribution. And at the end of that year, we were no longer a church. We were a church family, if you please. That's what we were. A group of people who loved each other, who cared about each other, who played together, who laughed together, who cried together. It was just amazing. It was just unbelievable. And you know, since I'm a new kid on the block, I can brag about this church. And I remember so very well when I first came here. I was 20 years old, and I lived with Miss Jenny Wood. Down her house isn't standing anymore. And if you lived with Miss Jenny, you came to church all the time. But that wasn't hard for me because I was brought up that way. But I loved this church from the very first time I ever came here. And my George belonged to this church as a boy. And so it was like home for him too. And it's been a wonderful, wonderful experience for me as an outsider to be a part of this church. It's been a wonderful experience to study the history of this church and to get to know these people. And I look out here at you right now, and even in this crowd of people, I see the people whom I have taught in this community, who've made me feel at home here. And that's what it's all about. That's what the church is about. We build on the past. We don't just live the past. And so this church has made a tremendous contribution to society. Mr. Nat Kelly told me one time, he said, we've never lost a soldier from his church. He said, we never lost a soldier from his church because this was a praying church. That's what he told me. And so we have had 21 ministers, full-time ministers, plus one associate. We've had 16 sons to go into the ministry from this church. We've had 9 daughters who have either gone into the ministry or who have married a minister from this church. And so it is with humility that I'd like to close with this. All of us can't be preachers. All of us can't be teachers. All of us can't be what society calls big cheese. But they are service and they're great for those who sit in the pews and listen, who sit in the classes to be taught, who take part in the church activities as directed, who come to be a part of the people. It takes all kinds. It takes all of us. And God has a place for each one of us. And though we say that Draper's Valley Presbyterian Church had its beginning in 1832, 173 years ago, in a little old brick clapboard house called Old Harmony. But Draper's Valley Presbyterian Church is older than that. Draper's Valley Presbyterian Church has its beginning, has its record going back 2,000 years ago. And as Peter said in Acts, there is only one way. The Lord Jesus Christ is the one and the only way of salvation. And no matter what else comes or goes, he's as steadfast as can be, and he is our way. God loves us, and we love him. And we come here and worship him on Sunday morning, Wednesday night, for Fall Festival. May we always bring glory and honor to his name and remember from whence we really came. Thank you very much.